Welcome to Sport Faith Life with Brian Bolt and Chad Carlson, two guys who came together for one common purpose, to think deeply about sport and faith. They are sports scholars, they're coaches, and they're competitive athletes, or at least they were. And together, they've created Sport Faith Life, a conversation that meets at the intersection of sport and faith.
Today on Sport Faith Life, we speak with Juliana Smith. She's the Executive Senior Associate Athletics Director for Mission Impact and Enrichment at Baylor University. And that's just the start of her title. Juliana first wanted to be a spy, so much so that she got a bachelor's and a master's degree from Ole Miss in criminal justice. But sport and faith came calling, and she answered. She already has a long history of successful stops in sport administration roles at places like Texas Tech, Oklahoma University, and Colgate. It's no wonder Baylor sought her out. And she'll be a keynote speaker at the Global Congress on Sport and Christianity in Waco, Texas, coming up here at the end of July. We can't wait to talk to Juliana about her work. So let's get started.
Juliana, tell us a little bit about sport in your life.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Sport actually has been an integral part of my life because I grew up around in a family with athletes. My dad played soccer, and the running joke is that I was never a daddy's girl because I didn't like soccer. It was too slow of a sport for me. And then I actually have older sisters, twin sisters, who did track in college. And so sport was just something that we did in our family from a pretty young age. The first sport I did was cheerleading and transitioned to add basketball, and I actually didn't start track and field until I got to high school.
I heard that soccer was too slow for you, which means you must be fast when you run. So we'll get into a little bit more of that later on, but tell us a little bit about faith in your life.
Yeah, I grew up in a household of believers. My earliest memories are of my family going to Mass, because we started as Catholic when we lived in New Jersey. All of the children went to Catholic school. My siblings had the choice when they got to high school to, you know, choose public or continue the Catholic school route. And then when we moved to Georgia, we started attending a Baptist church. And Wednesday nights, Sunday morning, Sunday school, prior to Sunday service, I was relegated to children's church because my parents wanted to make sure I was learning on my level. Youth explosion, summer camps, all of the deal, all of that. It's been a part of my life growing up. And I'd say I probably owned my faith late in my senior year of high school, going into college and really finding my voice and my footing in my relationship with God and during my time at Ole Miss.
So a Catholic upbringing that finds its way to a Baptist church, and already kind of interesting, and I want to go down that road a little bit, but I wonder if you could tell us a little something about yourself, anything that would help our listeners get to know you maybe away from work.
That's a great question. I would say I would consider myself a foodie. And I would say I was birthed into that identity likely because my mom's a chef or retired chef, and my parents owned restaurants growing up. So I grew up working in our family restaurant through high school until I left Georgia.
Fascinating. So would you call yourself a chef?
I would say I like my cooking more than eating out.
Ah, that's very good. Okay, give us a signature dish.
Nothing too fancy. I'd say salmon with rice and broccoli. It's probably my go-to. I've probably perfected the cook on salmon, which I appreciate.
Oh, that sounds excellent. And yeah, we get good salmon around here as well. So that's an interesting entry into maybe getting to know a little bit about you in your work life. I think that's a good way for us to start, just so that we can orient our listeners to the type of work you do day to day. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing at Baylor.
Absolutely. So in my role at Baylor, part of my responsibilities include overseeing one of our four pillars within the athletics department, and that pillar is the spiritual growth pillar. Within the spiritual growth pillar is our sports ministry team. So we have a team of three full-time chaplains that support our student athletes, our coaches, and our staff within the athletics department at Baylor. So that's one facet of it. I also have the responsibility for stewarding what inclusion and belonging looks like within our department, as well as serving as the women's basketball sport administrator and general manager as we move into this new era of college athletics. And then lastly, there's a piece of human resources, the employee relations part, that that I work closely with our university human resources colleagues as we work through workplace dynamics and relationships and things of that nature.
So how does one get to have those roles? I mean, geographically, like where else have you been? But what things have you done that have led you to like be doing this multifaceted job?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, I've been thinking about this question some time. Just a side note, in our industry of college athletics, summer is when most of our professional development opportunities take place, conferences, workshops, that sort of thing. And so I've been reflecting on my career, what you know I would like to do in this next upcoming year as far as goals and things. And so when I think about my journey, my background's in Homeland Security. So I wanted to be a spy. Declared my major the first day that I stepped foot on Ole Miss's campus and pursued that. So I, my undergraduate and my first graduate degree there in Homeland Security, studied abroad MI5, MI6. I was committed to doing that alongside being, you know, a collegiate athlete. And it wasn't until I started my grad program in Homeland Security that I realized I missed sport. I never wanted to coach. I didn't feel like I had the coaching gene, which I think is real. We can come back to that because I feel like I'm coaching every day now. but I didn't see another career path within athletics. I just was unaware. And I think part of it is because when I set my mind to something, I'm like hyper-focused on that. So I was going to be a spy. And so there could have been plenty of opportunities for me to be exposed to, you know, other career paths within athletics. And so I switched careers before really starting the first one and started as a graduate assistant in administration at the University of Oklahoma. And in that position, I was able to be exposed to so many different facets of our athletics department. And typically when one gets started in an athletics department, they come up through a particular vertical, right? Marketing, student athlete development, academics, even equipment. And I never had that not to say opportunity, but that wasn't my path. I was always an administrator, even as a graduate assistant. And then even my first full-time job, I served as director of operations for five different coaching staffs. And so I actually reported to our senior woman administrator. So again, I'm still an admin, but I also have the sport exposure. And from there, I was actually recruited to go back to the University of Oklahoma to oversee human resources. The running joke is that I called the deputy at the time. I said, "Larry, I don't have any HR experience. You know, I was maybe 23 years old at the time." And he's like, "It doesn't matter. You're smart. You'll figure it out. But people trust you." And so it wasn't until that particular conversation, I'm like, "Okay, maybe I might have found what I'm supposed to do, and being around people, leading people, is something that brings me great joy. And so I returned to Oklahoma and oversaw human resources for 3 years, and really enjoyed the impact that I was able to have in thinking about experiencing someone's how would I describe it? Probably most memorable moment in their career, like starting a job at the University of Oklahoma. That's kind of a big deal. But also like probably one of the hardest times in their career, being separated from maybe your dream job or having to uproot your family because you're having to leave a situation, whether you're a coach or something like that. And so I took great pride and understood the responsibility of caring for people in major life transitions from an HR perspective. And I think I was, you know, hooked from there and had the opportunity to go to Colgate University, where I worked with one of my first supervisors who became the athletics director there, overseeing all of the internal operations and student and personnel facing units within the athletic department there. So did that for 5 years, had an amazing time, really appreciated that level of college sports. So it's FCS sports, and still Division I, but just thinking about the high academic nature of Colgate and really competitive student athletes. It's a liberal arts school. And so there are so many dynamics that I had not experienced before in my previous stops. I was a member of the faculty technically there. And so even serving on the faculty affairs committee and being in a room with the provost every Monday afternoon for 3 hours talking about, you know, tenure dossiers, like, right? I'm an athletics administrator. And to have that unique experience was absolutely invaluable. And was amazing. And so, Baylor called and said, hey, we're wondering if you're planning on, you know, following your supervisor, because AD had gone to another institution. And they're like, I wonder if you're following her to that next place. I'm like, nah, I don't feel like the Lord's leading me there. They're like, okay, good. There's this position that we want to talk to you about, but we're going to the basketball tournament. So like, we'll call you later, sort of deal. And so the rest is history. I don't know if you want me to go into that story just yet.
Well, it's a great story. We'll probably circle back to it a bit. I hear in there that you were called to sort of pull into or think about this position. I think you're going to be called again. I can hear a lot of skills in what you've described, but also a lot of leadership. And when you say things, when you hear things like people trust you, that's a pretty unique attribute. And it's great that you were able to hear it at this age and yes, continue on into whatever is next in your journey. I want to go back to something you said early on in your answer, and I'd like to get underneath it a little bit. You talked about, I missed sport. Why did you miss? Because most of what you described was really, you know, administrative skill, but you missed sport. Tell me a little bit about that and maybe get me underneath a little bit your track and field experience.
Yeah. So sport, I didn't know this at the time, right? When I was missing it, when I was longing, I thought I missed the familiarity, right? The structure that it provided, the friends that I had. I absolutely loved competing. I am a competitor through and through. I hate losing. And I lost that being in grad school, right? So you come from being an undergraduate student athlete in the SEC, like competing at a high level, right? So there's 20 to 30 hours that are scripted and programmed for me, not including class and not including, you know, being a college student and hanging out with friends. And it was almost like a light switch to grad school where, like, there's nothing to do all day. I go to class at 3 o'clock, I get out at 6, and then there's nothing to do all evening. It was a completely different experience. And at first I would say I missed the structure, I missed having things to do. But what I realized about what I actually missed was being surrounded by people who were so intrinsically motivated to be excellent at whatever they were doing that it made you want to be better at what you were doing. And that's the beauty, I think, of, you know, a sport like track and field. There's 21 events outdoor, right? And so the fact that I can be motivated by my teammate who's a pole vaulter and I'm throwing the hammer, like, you don't see that in a lot of, you know, different sports. Yes, you can see it in sports where different position groups and things of that nature, but I really appreciated my time as a track and field student athlete and how I found myself being encouraged by, being challenged by people who, if not for track and field, I likely would not have crossed paths with.
So what were some of the things then that you learned once you came to that realization, I need to be back in sport. I want to be back in sport. You got back into it. People liked you, thought you were good at what you did. They trusted you. You clearly had mentors that wanted you to follow them. What were some of the things that you learned at Oklahoma and then at Colgate that you've taken with you to where you are now?
So the first thing I would say, Oklahoma taught me that there is a such thing as, I don't know, an ever pursuit of excellence. Like, I feel like given the level of accomplishment and success that sport programs and even, you know, administrative units experienced at Oklahoma, there was never a sense of complacency or satisfaction with that level of success, right? And I give this example all the time. When I was there, they had in-house production. It's called Sooner Vision. And we had producers in Sooner Vision who were Emmy award-winning producers. And they're producing games, football games, and they're winning Emmys, right? And so like to think that like I'm down the hall from that, so for someone who's that excellent, that they're recognized beyond the industry of sport, how could I not show up every day and want to be excellent at whatever it is I was doing? So that's what I would say I learned from Oklahoma that stuck with me. I'd say folks who work with me or for me probably now say I have an unreasonable level of expectation when it comes to operating with excellence. But it's just so innate. And I think it spoke to something that was already within me. Right. And so I appreciated the opportunity to be challenged further extrinsically through that experience. And then Colgate taught me the value of recognizing the position of sport and athletics in the setting of higher education, right? And so at Oklahoma, it's easy to say like, this is a big time athletics department. And this is what we do. We do sport really well. We have Heisman trophies all the way down this road, that sort of thing. And at Colgate, I really appreciated that we had to connect with, work alongside, support the academic mission of the institution to be successful as an athletics department. And our student athletes expected it of us. Like they chose a place like Colgate because they wanted to be challenged in the classroom and they wanted to compete at the Division I level. And so learning how to live in this space of both and learning how in some seasons, one has to take precedent over the other, even when it's inconvenient, right? So midterms happen around the conference tournament for basketball. We want to be really good in basketball, but our students also don't want to miss their midterm. So you might have to drive a student 7 hours to make it to the game after their final is over. And so there is something about that that just like really spoke to my heart that like it can be both and.
So you've opened up a couple of really big topics there, which are fantastic. And I'm sure we won't be able to get to all of them, but I wonder if I could just steer back a little bit, because I think they're both captured by this word excellence. Mm-hmm. And I want to go into your role a little, because your role is about really faith at, you know, at Baylor University with a certain subset of the population, thinking about this idea of excellence and sort of wrestling mm-hmm. with, okay, how can I be excellent, or should I even be focused on this kind of excellence in the kingdom of Christ, right? Where I'm in the world, but not of it. Mm-hmm. And there are some real crises of the soul as student athletes, coaches think about this idea of excellence. How do you sort of bring these things together from a faith perspective?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think I was processing as you were just asking and framing the question, and I think I was hired to steward the tension, right? Right. This is a high performing athletics department, home of national champion, multiple national championship coaches, Hall of Fame coaches, teams, Heisman Trophy winners. Like it's the real deal. And we are a part of a community at this institution, and we know that our identity is not based in any of those things. And so how does one lead student athletes to want to pursue that and tell them that that doesn't matter to your eternity, right? Like it's such a unique challenge that I don't know that very many other administrators have to wrestle with. And how they lead their student athletes and how they lead their coaches who are getting paid to pursue that excellence, right? And so I think my role is, or part of the role of many of the administrators here, but particularly from a spiritual growth standpoint, is how do we continue to equip our staff members, our coaches, and in turn our student athletes to stay grounded in their true identity while meeting the capacity of their talent to pursue that excellence. And I think we do that in a number of ways. We do that by hiring high character coaches who have their own belief systems that align with our mission, because we can't teach it, Like, it's got to be a part of who you are, and we can enhance it. We can give you tools to know how to take your personal faith and translate that to how you coach within a practice or a game. But that's got to be a part of who you are before you step foot on this campus. And I think we do a really great job about finding folks who are mission fit. And then we help them build the culture within their program and how they can lead forward with their faith. Because most people have not coached in an environment where they can speak Bible verses outwardly to their teams, whether it be in a huddle or pray publicly before a game. Like, yes, they might do it, you know, in a locker room or somewhere else, but showing folks and teaching them how to operate in this environment. I've seen amazing things happen as it relates to the level of vulnerability that our professional staff are able to show to their student athletes that they haven't been able to do before in their professional careers.
I'm sure we're all hearing the enthusiasm in your voice right now, Juliana, for what you have going on, which is really cool. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about your particular vertical, right, within the athletic department, thinking about that pillar that you oversee. You mentioned having three chaplains, full-time chaplains. I wonder if you can talk about how that's structured, as well as the rest of the employees that are reporting within that pillar, what that looks like, right? Baylor might be different. Probably is different. I'd love to hear you talk about it.
Yeah, so we have three full-time chaplains. We have an associate AD for Mission Impact Enrichment, that's Kevin Washington. And then we have two directors. We have Holly McKenzie and Josh Ihambe. And that's just the full-time staff. We have a team of about 12 chaplains total who support our student athletes. And so there's a variety of how they're positioned, right? So we have three who are full-time. We have three who are full-time staff members within coaching, like coaching staffs, right? Volleyball, women's basketball, and softball. I was wanting to say soccer, softball. So those are head coaches who've decided that they want to designate a member of their coaching staff or their operational staff to serve as a chaplain for their student athletes. Oh, and then baseball has two part-time chaplains that are on their staff. And so to think that a head coach is willing to use some of their coaching staff salary pool to invest in having someone serve as a chaplain for their student athletes who travels with them, who's there for pregame devotionals and things like that. That makes Baylor unique. That's the Baylor difference, I would say, within this Division I landscape and even Division I faith institutions. There are not many of us, but there's some of us. And then we have folks who are volunteering their time, because sport and relationship with Christ is so important to them. And either they love Baylor so much, or they just really appreciate the value of how sport can be used as a catalyst to develop character and to develop one's spiritual relationship with the Lord, who show up every month for our luncheon. And, you know, we do almost like an in-service sort of deal where we're praying for one another, talking through some of the things that we're encountering with our student athletes within our programs. And then we're going out and we're doing the work. We're doing discipleship. We're doing mission trips, and we're doing community service. We have chapel courses at Baylor. Every student has to go through two chapel credits, so to speak. And we have two that are specifically for student athletes. And we just added a summer session because we felt like there was a unique opportunity with football and men's and women's basketball who are here during the summer to really dig in and give them a unique experience from a chapel perspective. And so there's so many different ways in which we are able to equip and lead our student athletes in this space, but I could go on and on about that.
Well, and we actually will allow you to go on and on, but maybe in another forum, and that's a nice transition for us. We, you know, we're coming up on the 4th Global Congress on Sport and Christianity, which will be hosted by Baylor University Truett Seminary, and it's late July, early August this summer, and we're getting ready to roll, and you will be a part of that. What this is, it's a gathering of all types of different folks that have sport and faith somewhere in their work, in their title, or in their interest area. And so there are coaches, there are athletes, there are academics, there are chaplains, authors, administrators, just a variety of types of folks that think about this sort of thing. And so you come at it with, you know, you're definitely fit because you're doing this kind of work. But also we love it when people bring their own unique perspective to this world. right, to this world of sport and faith, because there's so many interesting things to unpack. Without giving it all away, Juliana, I wonder if you could just think about the context of sport. Maybe big time sport is the way you want to think about it. Mm-hmm. What do you think the world of sport and faith needs to hear at this point? Mm-hmm. And how would you go about kind of giving that message?
No pressure.
No, not at all.
The first thought that comes to mind is that it's possible to be really successful in sport and maintain integrity in a relationship with Christ. Like, you don't have to forfeit one for the other. The Lord delights in excellence, right? He wants us to be excellent. And he's equipped us, those of us who are able to perform or coach at any level, to do so. I think what might be the challenge is to trust that. That surrendering that talent, it's almost like giving back that talent to the Lord and trusting him to do with it what he pleases will always end up for your good, right? And so there's something so special about surrender. There's a peace that comes with it. I mean, it's kind of scary, I would say, sometimes. But when you're able to give back or gift back to the Lord the gift that he's given you, and allow him to lead you in how you steward that gift, it takes the pressure off. And I believe that we have been taught that unless we can control an outcome, unless we can control something, that it'll go off the rails, or that, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. I'm like, that's what faith is, right? Like, Lord, you've blessed me with this thing. So what is your purpose for it? How do you want me to use it to glorify you? Whether it's a loss or a victory. Like, Lord, you still get the glory. How do I steward this in such a way that people are curious about you? Not what we're doing at Baylor Athletics. Not how we got, you know, a national championship without having any NIL money, right? That's not the question. The question is, like, how are you still faithful to this God even when fill in the blank?
Well, Juliana, you are not overtaken by that question. In fact, you kind of hit it out of the park. So we really appreciate your perspective on all of these things. And boy, do we look forward to hearing more about this at the Global Congress. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of time with us. Thanks for opening up a bit of your world and describing a little about what you do. It's been fascinating.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to the Sport Faith Life podcast, a conversation at the intersection of sport and faith. Read the corresponding blog post and learn more about us at sportfaithlife.com. Listen to more of our podcasts on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And follow us on social media to stay up to date with everything sport, faith, life.